This is Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning. Our guest this morning is Andrea Swenson, the author of Got to Be Something Here, The Rise of the Minneapolis Sound, published this year by the University of Minnesota Press. Ms. Swenson has long been a music journalist in the Twin Cities. She also hosts a radio program called The Local Show in Minneapolis, and she joins us by phone this morning. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
Just fine, thanks. A little snow up here. I'm not sure what's happening in Minneapolis right now.
Same here.
Okay. Well, I guess it makes sense for late December. That's good news, I suppose. Well, this book is, I feel like it's a book that's been a long time coming. There have been several books lately talking about Minneapolis and Minnesota music history. There was one out a year or two ago that centered around the white rock scene in the 1960s, focusing especially on the Trashmen's Surfin' Bird. But there hasn't really been that's touched on the Minneapolis sound, which I'd like to think encompasses everything, but it really starts with one particular person. But I love that you don't just stay right there with Prince. It's really talking about the nascence of this sound too. As a music historian, I really appreciate that. I know that as a journalist, you're often trained to be very in the now. What inspired you to write a book about a music history scene like this?
Well, I think the first impetus was really a pair of compilations that came out from this era. There was a Twin Cities Funk and Soul compilation that came out from Secret Stash Records, which is a local label. And then Numero Group out of Chicago put out a compilation called Purple Snow, which was Prince's just immediate peers and people that came out right before him. And listening to all this music, I found that, you know, it was so high quality. And I didn't know hardly anything about these people, and I found that almost kind of embarrassing as someone who is a music journalist and, you know, has focused on Minnesota music for most of my career. And I also just kind of found it unacceptable that we don't know more about these stories. So that was really the beginning, and I just said someone needs to ask these people while they're still here to tell us, you know, what their memories are, what they know about this history, and just turn a tape recorder on and capture it while there's still time.
Right, and especially given the recent and unfortunate death of Prince a year ago, realizing that these stories are somewhat fragile, that now is the time to capture them before they are truly lost.
Absolutely, yeah. And I had started working on the book a few years ago, so he was alive, and Sonny Knight was alive, and it was really it added to the urgency to have these people pass away during the research, because it just reminded me, you know, you need to ask the older generations what they know while you still can.
So researching this book, I suppose you probably wanted to have an interview with Prince, and that didn't actually happen, though. I noticed in the epilogue, you finally, after a lot of your writing of this book had been done, you'd done some interviews, that Prince suddenly called you out, and a friend of his brought you over to Paisley Park so that you did have a meeting with Prince at some point. But it seems to me, when I was reading it, I was nervous, but I liked at one point that he kind of called something on you and looked to you for a reaction, and your response was that you were bemused, but you weren't mad. You weren't mad when he was sort of playing with you.
Yes, yeah, he had a very kind of cat and mouse way of interacting with people. He was very, very funny and clever, and definitely keeps you on your toes in a conversation. But, you know, he didn't grant traditional interviews, especially later in his career. He would never, allow someone to tape record him or even to really take notes while you're talking. He was very much about trying to have conversations with people that felt natural. And he, I think, sincerely wanted to get to know people, and he was very intellectually deep and liked having deep conversations with people, but he hated the idea of just having someone shoot questions at him and then possibly be misinterpreted later on when it goes to print. So, yeah, he would never submit to an actual interview.
I think about, and I don't know, because the three famous people from Minnesota that have a connection to the music scene, Prince and Bob Dylan and Garrison Keillor, three people who have notoriously been very private and shy. At least one-on-one. They're very comfortable on stage. But I'm not sure if that's a Minnesotan thing. We always talk about Minnesota shy or Minnesota nice. But I wonder if that level of creativity often fosters in a person who is naturally shy.
I think it might be that, and it might also be just a disinterest in the kind of industry side of having to do interviews and press and having to care about what people think about you.
Mm-hmm.
I think for Prince, that was just very irritating. He wanted to be focused on what he was doing and have real moments with people. And he didn't want to have to do anything that seemed inauthentic.
Yeah, I find that. I really respect that, though, as a journalist and as a radio person, too, trying to make interviews with people that you want them to talk. But when you sit back and think about it, you think, oh, actually, that's actually probably a more high road than pandering, for example. It's something
right.
that Prince probably has never done in his life. So tell us about the title, Got to Be Something Here. I thought, well, is that a Prince song? Do I know that song? But then I got a copy of Purple Snow and realized that this is a song that actually has a big impact on his career, but it's not a Prince song per se.
Right. Yeah, it's such a fascinating song. So the song was recorded by a band called The Family. And when we think of The Family, we might go to the 1985 band that Prince assembled that originally recorded Nothing Compares to You. And Prince was actually taking that name from someone that he was very inspired by as a teenager. And this band called The Family in North Minneapolis formed in the early 70s in this community center called The Way. It was led by a role model of Prince's, Sonny Thompson, who would later be in his New Power Generation band as Sonny T. And they were the hot band right before Prince's band came out, right before Terry Lewis's band formed, right before Jimmy Jam was in a band called Mind and Matter. And all of these bands would kind of go head-to-head at these battles of the bands in North Minneapolis. And The Family was kind of the big brothers of the scene. So they ended up hiring Prince to play guitar on this track, Got to Be Something Here, in 1975. And Prince actually used the money from that recording session to fly to New York and try to shop himself to record labels for the first time. So it was this very pivotal moment in his life with these people that he really respected. And it's kind of this lost song. It didn't even end up getting released under their name. One of the members formed a band called The Lewis Connection and put it on his record under that name, even though it wasn't that band. So it's just kind of this bizarre little moment. And I thought the lyrics were really profound, too, thinking about the themes of the book, which really details a lot of the racial discrimination that these bands faced, just trying to be successful. And having that idea of there's got to be something here for us, even if it doesn't seem like it, I really like that.
Yeah, it's certainly a wonderful title for the book, too. It does invite you to wonder what is there and to discover all sorts of stories that you'd never heard before.
Yeah.
How did you begin this process? And certainly as a journalist, you had contacts, you know people in the scene, but you've got to start digging deeper. And whether or not you actually ever get Prince to do an interview, you found other people. How did you begin to sort of dig into that track?
Yeah, I honestly, before I even talked to a single person for an interview, I decided I needed to do just a ton of research first. So I probably spent a year at the library and reading articles and, you know, reading the liner notes of these compilations and kind of mapping out, okay, here's the key players, here's some of the developments that happened. And then also trying to zoom out and take a big picture look at what was going on in the Twin Cities that was affecting these musicians. If we're going to talk about racial discrimination and segregation, we have to get into stories like the construction of I-94 through the Rondo neighborhood, which was a historic African-American neighborhood, and how that also impacted North Minneapolis and the unrest that happened in North Minneapolis, which actually led to the building of this Way Community Center that I talked about that ended up being kind of a musical incubator in that area. So it was all these social factors and this kind of broad history that is maybe too recent to have been documented in one book yet, and trying to piece together all of these little stories and how they fit together. And then I started talking to people, and then by the time I could do an interview, I could ask them, okay, what do you remember about this one specific date or this moment or this record or this photograph? I found a lot of photographs, and I was able to show them to people, and that helped a lot to really jog those memories.
Wow. So the Minneapolis sound, if I had to, I don't want to sandbag you, but if I had to ask, what record for you is the first record that really had what's called the Minneapolis sound? Is it a Prince song, or is it one of those earlier tracks that he either enjoyed or something that he played on as a sideman?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say there's a record by the Lewis Connection that I mentioned. That is very much in line. There's a lot of really great synthesizer parts on that. And then I think, honestly, Dirty Mind by Prince is where everything really coalesced. He started kind of shedding this, he had almost like a disco flair going on in his first records, and he kind of shed all the trends of the day and finally found his own unique sound. And I just love that that captures this moment where Prince is becoming Prince. So I think that's really, that's where it solidifies.
Yeah, the Minneapolis sound, especially those earlier tracks, do sort of exist, kind of a Venn diagram, I guess, maybe overlapping with the disco scene. And that sound certainly is part of it. But it's the way that Prince, as you say, emerged from that, grabbed some funk from pre-disco days, grabbed some rock music, grabbed all sorts of things and really put it all together in a way that surprised people.
Yeah, and that's why I love that the book ends at First Avenue in 1981, which is really the moment that, well, it was the first time he played that room back when it was called Sam's. And it was really the moment that he was embraced by the white, larger rock community in Minnesota. They all came out and saw him and said, "Who is this guy?"
Yeah.
You know, he'd already been around for a couple of years, but it was kind of a mainstream breakthrough moment for him. And it was because he was combining all of those different elements. And it was able to relate to people that like new wave or like punk and people that liked funk and R&B and disco.
Well, and the Dick Clark quote that you had in there as well, that nobody would expect this sound to come from Minneapolis. I almost take umbrage with that. I feel like, well, there's something about Minnesota that people think, oh, nothing ever comes from there. But we certainly have proved them wrong in so many ways. The Minneapolis sound still going strong now in many ways. Its influence is still affecting music around the world, but in Minneapolis as well.
Oh, absolutely. And the scene is more eclectic today than it's ever been. There's more scenes happening and more different styles of music coming together than I've ever seen before. And it's really exciting. And I know in his final years, Prince was really energized by that. He was paying attention to that. You know, there's been a big upswing in bands that bring horns to the stage, which is something that he was very passionate about. Mm-hmm. And then bands that are mixing, you know, hip hop with funk, with R&B, with pop. And it's, yeah, it continues to this day.
I loved that Prince did employ many musicians. It wasn't just using synthesizers to make his band more efficient. That live music made with real people and real horns, real guitars, real drums, that mattered to him. That's something that matters to me, too, so I always valued that.
Oh, absolutely. And he had just a tremendous respect for anyone that actually knew how to play an instrument. I think that was kind of a bar for him, that if you could play an instrument, then you could hang out with Prince.
Fantastic. Andrea, thanks so much. We really appreciate your time, and congratulations on the book. Are you working on a new one now, too?
I've got a lot of ideas. Nothing that I've focused on quite yet, but I'll definitely be writing more books. I just absolutely love this process.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Take care. Andrea Swenson, the author of Got to Be Something Here, The Rise of the Minneapolis Sound. She's long been a music journalist in the Twin Cities, hosts a radio program as well called The Local Show in Minneapolis, and she joined us by phone this morning. Minnesota Reads is produced at KMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.